From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mark Bittman didn't become one of the country's best-known food writers by telling us to be acrobats of French cuisine. He got there with a quick wit and a straightforward take on cooking and eating well, and by getting us to think about the relationship between our stomachs, our health, and the planet. One great way? Eat vegetarian, at least sometimes. This hour On Point, cook, writer, and food philosopher Mark Bittman on how to cook everything vegetarian. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you ready for this? Are you already deep in it? And what's your question for Mark Bittman on the vegetarian way? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we will speak with the winner of last week's New York City Marathon, the first American woman to win in 40 years. Shalane Flanagan will be with us. But first, to a few vegetables. There's some interesting stuff going on out there. According to ESPN, the sports channel, vegetarianism, even veganism, are finding real enthusiasts in the NBA, professional basketball players. Here's Boston Celtics point guard Kyrie Irving, a big name in the NBA, a couple days ago talking to ESPN about why he switched to a plant-based diet.
This season, being more of a plant-based diet, getting away from the animals and all that, man, I had to get away from that. So my energy is up. My body feels amazing. So, you know, just understanding what the diet is like for me and what's beneficial for me for having the highest energy out here and being able to sustain it at a very high level.
Okay, that's a big guy in the NBA. We know the cultural prejudices here. Not everybody's buying it. A few days ago, here was NBA Hall of Famer Charles Barkley, now an analyst on NBA on TNT. Of course, he likes to stir things up with provocative statements, took up the cudgel against vegetarianism. The show's host is startled, and Charles Barkley here doubles down. Here was that exchange.
You don't think there are actually vegetarians?
There's no such thing as a vegetarian. Nobody doesn't like meat, Ernie.
Prime form tonight.
Coach. It's not a thing. Nobody doesn't like meat.
It's not a thing. Nobody doesn't like meat, says Charles Barkley. Well, let's see. Joining me now from New York is Mark Bittman, award-winning author and food writer, author of 20 books on food and cooking. He's just out with a completely revised 10th anniversary edition of How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. And you'll find a couple of recipes on our website, onpointradio.org. Mark Bittman, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hey, Tom. Great to be here again.
Charles Barkley, nobody doesn't like meat. Now, some vegetarians certainly do not and do not want it. But what about it, this eternal tension between the meat eaters and the presumption that it must be right there at the heart of the diet and the others, even in the NBA now, and a lot of them saying, no, thanks, I'm going to get a whole lot more vegetables in here. What about that tension?
Well, you know, it's a spectrum, and Charles Barkley obviously is known for saying extreme things, so we can sort of ignore that. But if you read what Kyrie Irving said, he said he's moving towards more of a plant-based diet. Yeah. He didn't declare himself a vegan. So I think we know that everybody, almost everybody in this country could benefit by moving towards more of a plant-based diet. It's not really about being vegetarian. It's not really about being vegan. It's about eating more plants, less junk, less animal products. And you and I have talked about this before, of course. And it's a cultural meme. It's something that has been – it's not new. It's been going on for 10, 20, even 50 years. People have been saying the writing is on the wall. We need to eat less junk. We need to eat fewer animal products. And the thing to substitute for those things are plants. So it's not that complicated. People – try to complicate it. People try to confuse it. People try to make a religion out of it, but it's none of those things. It's pretty simple and straightforward.
You are not a vegetarian, right?
I certainly am not a vegetarian.
Are you trying to make,
I often say I have no interest in being a vegetarian or in anyone else being one, although I'm fine with that. I wouldn't say what Charles Barkley says, which is idiotic, but it's not about being a vegetarian. It's about eating a saner, more sustainable, more environmentally and health-friendly diet.
I mean, but you remind us, Americans still eat a lot of meat. Only the Australians eat more. They eat 205 pounds of meat and poultry a year. We eat just over 200 pounds a year. We're still way up there on the meat count. But I seem to find more and more people who are saying, not necessarily vegetarian, but I really want to do more with the vegetarian way, even if it's not all the time.
Me too. and it's a self-selecting audience, and I expect you and I probably have very similar audiences, which is why I'm on your show.
I go home to the Midwest, and I'm seeing it there as well. It doesn't seem to be some kind of coastal, feet thing. It seems like people are just looking around saying, wait a minute, a lot of them say, yeah, I like my meat, but I want to get better at working more vegetable dishes, even main courses, into my way of eating.
I don't think it's a coastal effete thing either. I think it's a thing of people who – everybody knows what the message is. This is not news to anyone. Some people are able to act on it more easily than others, more readily than others. And, a 1% difference in the United States – 1% of the population is 3 million people. That's a lot of people. So as things change, they change gradually. We have seen a decline in the consumption of beef in this country. We're eating much more chicken. Whether that's a good thing or not is debatable. But, the question is how do we get people to eat more vegetables, basically? And that's the goal of How to Cook Everything Vegetarian.
We're going to dive into the book and the cooking and the recipes, but – if you step back from it, Mark, what's the hurdle? I mean, it seems to me that for a lot of people who are raised with meat at the center of the plate and vegetables as kind of, a little here and a little there, the trick is figuring out how to make vegetables the main show and end up satisfied with taste and satiation and all the rest. Or how do you see the hurdle? Even when people say, I want to do this, then they kind of stumble on how.
Well, there are many hurdles, and one is, of course – excuse me one second mm-hmm. – one is, of course, marketing, and we are marketed to death with junk food and animal products, and that's done from practically the moment we're born. So until we start teaching our kids how to eat a sane diet, we're not going to have a generation of healthy adults. I mean, that's a big picture answer, but that is really the biggest issue here. But on an individual basis, it's a matter of eating better meat but less of it. It's a matter of cooking dishes with smaller amounts of meat. It's a matter of learning how to cook things, as you say, that are satisfying, that contain no meat at all. Kind of combination of those three things, saying you're not going to eat meat more than once a day or more than three times a week or whatever rule works for you, or saying you're going to reduce your portion size from a third of a pound to an eighth of a pound. There are many, many different tactics. Among them is learning to really enjoy vegetables, and we've never had better access to vegetables and to, local well-grown vegetables in most of the country.
We'll have people who are already way down that road. I know you are, but think of a Charles Barkley for a minute here. If you want to sort of pull somebody over the line so that they're not thinking that every meal has to have meat at the center of it, where do you take them first, Mark? What's a recipe or two that gets people thinking, oh, wow, that's really tasty and I'm really satisfied?
I'm not sure. I'd work on Charles Barkley as my first my first challenge.
But it's a challenge.
I think there are people who understand this and want to do it and don't say idiotic things like Charles Barkley. And those are the people, that I'd see working on. And again, I'd say, look – It's winter. There's a dozen winter squashes, root vegetables, et cetera, that you've probably never tried. There's 20 ways to cook each of them that are great. Let's try some of them and let's see if we can integrate some of this kind of food more into our diet. No one's asking you to be a vegetarian. No one's asking you to be anti-meat. It's just what's right. Let's move in that direction. As I said right at the top, it's a spectrum. It's not a black and white thing or an either or thing as some people try to make it. We need to move in a given direction, and as we move in that direction, we'll be healthier, we'll be doing the planet a favor, we'll be doing animals a favor.
But help Charles out here with some crossover ideas, recipes. I mean, because a lot of people, let's say, okay, I'll have a veggie burger. That's about as far as they know, because it sort of fits a meat format, but it's vegetables.
Right.
But to get him over into the land where, no, it's a full-on entree right there on your plate, and that's gorgeous. What would you, give it your best shot. Here's Charles Barkley. persuade him with a dish, what would you put out there?
You know, with someone who thinks that meat has to be a part of things, I'd make him a stir fry with some meat in it and say, here's a dish with meat in it. But it's 90% vegetables. Mm-hmm. It's not 90% animal products. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about whatever strategy is going to work. And for some people, what's going to work is to have a little bit of meat once or twice a day, but it's not to sit around eating steaks, you know, six nights a week.
And if we don't let you visit the butcher, so there's no meat in this dish, and you're still trying to persuade Charles Barkley, what do you put on his plate?
I don't know, eggplant parmesan maybe, something that that's not alien to him, but is going to be satisfying but is not going to have meat in it. If someone's going to be receptive, if someone's going to say, I'd love to try some great stuff that's completely vegan or, you know, has no meat, no animal products, I would do delicata squash stuffed with grains or stuffed with tomatoes or something like eggplant parmesan without cheese, or you know, a mix of root vegetables that's stewed with olive oil and rosemary, and just you know, irresistibly tender. I mean, there's hundreds.
You got
there's me. There's more options than I can imagine.
I don't know about Charles, but you've got me. We're going to take the Charles Barkley frame off this conversation and let it go much, much wider in a minute. Mark Bittman is with us. He's out with the 10th anniversary edition of How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. And among other things, it is beautiful. The photography in this book is just incredible. It will make you hungry. Mark, please stand by there in New York. Here's Frank Zappa. This is On Point. Call any vegetable. Call any vegetable. Pick up your phone. Call any vegetable.
Chances are good that a vegetable will respond to you. Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting Blue Apron.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with food maven, philosopher, and cook Mark Bittman about how to go green with our diets and cooking. He's out with the 10th anniversary edition of his big cookbook, How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. You can find a couple of recipes from that at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us today. Have you gotten to where you can move the vegetables from the side dish to the main dish? Have you cleared that hurdle? Have you figured out how to make the main dish of veggies tasty and satisfying? Are you still back trying to make a veggie burger taste like meat, or are you way beyond that now? And what's your question on a vegetarian meal that's delicious, satisfying, nutritious for Mark Bittman? Mark Bittman gets around. I mean, he thinks about the big issues about food, the environment. He was a correspondent on the Showtime Channel's documentary series about climate change called Years of Living Dangerously. Here he was when he wasn't writing new cookbooks, visiting a drill site where a compressor's been leaking huge amounts of methane into the atmosphere for a couple of years. He asked a local official why nobody fixed the leak.
No one's doing anything. How can the company let it continue? How can regulators let it continue?
I wish I knew the answer to that.
Climate change. It may well be the story of the 21st century. I think we're going to look back in 10 or 20 years and say we missed a lot of opportunities.
From climate change to your plate, Mark Bittman is on it. How to Cook Everything Vegetarian is the book. Mark, 10 years since you first brought this out. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous book. I mean, just flipping through, I can't get over the photography. But what changes beyond this is gorgeous to the recipes, the profile? Have you got a different approach to what you're offering or how you're presenting it here?
Photographs are – I'm glad you pointed that out, so I won't say anything about that. I'm glad you think it's beautiful. I do too. And I had almost nothing to do with that, which was great.
Somebody did you a favor.
There is a different approach, and I think – you know, the original book was published 10 years ago, but it was worked on closer to 15 years ago.
Yep.
And I think my notion of what vegetarianism was and what eating more vegetables was like – they've matured. And I think one of the things that I said when I started to do that book was, much as I love the old Moosewood cookbook,
I don't
want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pull meat out of this book and substitute cheese and eggs. And then looking at it 10 years later, I thought that's exactly – you know, I did way more of that than I want to do. And the spirit of the new book is much more – it's much lighter. It's much more vegetable forward. It's lower. It's not just lower in meat. It's lower in animal products. I think it's really points the way towards how we ought to be consuming, you know, 80-90% of our calories.
Give us a couple of recipes that illustrate that lighter approach that you're finding this time out, 10 years on.
I think one that I would – I know I mentioned eggplant parmesan before, and I will get to some others, but there are
hardly sounds light from a lot that I know.
Well, eggplant that's parmesan's the thing, gonna be a is 10 that ton. Eggplant parmesan is this, you know, is this sort of monster mozzarella ricotta parmesan thing. But if you do eggplant parmesan with tomato sauce and a little bit of parmesan cheese, you're looking at a completely different kind of thing. And I think that that's a good example because it sounds like such a heavy dish. But it's not. I think rice and beans, same kind of thing. It's like classically a big deal dish. But if you start looking at lighter pilafs and dishes with chickpeas instead of ham, or, you know, vegetarian biryani, which is really, really great. Trying to think of more. I know you're looking for main coursey kind of things. I think about vegetable soups, which are fast and easy and can use lots and lots of different dishes. And then I think about, I mentioned before, stuffed squash, stuffed vegetables are things that people really like. Stir-fried greens with a variety of things. And again, I think fewer, you know, classic dishes like ratatouille and vegetables braised with coconut or coconut milk. Mm-hmm. I think fewer things that are heavy and dairy products, fewer things that use meat substitutes. I'm not anti-tofu, anti-tempeh, any of that stuff. But I think that the joy, the fun is really in discovering the kinds of ways that other cultures have prepared vegetables, or even that, you know, vegetables have been prepared classically in the United States that we actually like or even love but don't think about that much. Vegetable pancakes. Roast vegetables individually or, you know, mixed together. I could go on. Obviously.
I mean, it's getting so much better here. Years ago, I was as a very young guy in India for a year, barely ate meat, barely thought about missing it because the cuisine was so rich and flavorful. Came home and found it was hard to stay on that vegetarian path back here because we just didn't have as much facility with it. We didn't have a deep tradition, but a lot has developed in recent years.
I mean, that's, you know, you're talking about a tradition. You're talking about a sort of difference in traditions that has roots literally thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So without making over generalizations, it is true that many Asian cultures, most Asian cultures, were rice-based cuisines where vegetables, meat, but even vegetables were used almost as condiments. Whereas Europeans began raising meat because there was much more pasture land than there is in Asia and grew up, for want of a better term, developed eating meat. And then when they colonized, invaded, found, whatever you want to say, the New World, where there was plenty of land on which to pasture animals, they did. And so, you know, the consequence is that you and I and most listeners grew up in a culture where meat was primary. But from a public health perspective and from an environmental perspective, that is not possible to extend any further than it's been extended already. And the beginning of eating more plant-forward diets are both – beginnings are both public health beginnings and environmental beginnings. We have a public health crisis that is largely a result of junk food and cheap animal products. And we have an environmental crisis that I wouldn't say is largely a result of those things, but is no, that's not true. I wouldn't say is not primarily, but is largely a result of those same things.
I mean, the last couple of years, I've gone much more veggie-based, and it just, among other things, it feels great. It just feels great.
Everybody says that. And you know, whether Kyrie Irving is a vegetarian or a vegan or not, when you have athletes, because it used to be you'd say, oh, you should be eating more vegetables, and people would say, well, I go to the gym, I need much more protein than that, which is – most of us get 60-80% more protein than we need. When you have athletes like Kyrie Irving saying, I'm going with a more plant-forward diet, I mean, this is a guy who probably loses 10 pounds every time he plays a, plays a game.
And not just him. I mean, he's with the South. He's got Damian Lillard at the Portland Trailblazers and his canter with the New York Knicks, mostly meatless. Damian's vegan. Victor Oladipo at the Indiana Pacers, kind of semi-vegetarian. A lot of NBA guys getting in here. Mark Bittman is with us. His new book is How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. It is pretty gorgeous. It will make you hungry. Might make you, I don't know about a vegetarian, but it might make you closer to it. Jessica in Buffalo, New York is calling. Hi, Jessica. You're on with Mark Bittman. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
I am a plant-based chef in Buffalo, New York.
All right.
And I lecture on the topic of how to get people to eat more plants. And really, I've entered this field to help heal myself. I've healed my husband. And I think the topic, while it's amazing to have you speak about this here, the conversation is greatly lacking in medical schools, and it's greatly lacking in medical offices. And people are very hungry for this information, and they're not getting it. They're not being given the information that's been largely published in respected medical journals that plant-based diets are greatly health-promoting, whereas animal-based diets are disease-promoting. And when cultures shift to a meat-centric diet, they see the diseases of kings that we now have. One in three people in America have cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
And nearing the 40% mark where we have an obesity epidemic.
So, Jessica, how do you do it? You're a plant-based chef, so if you don't want it to be like eat your spinach or just do it because I tell you to or it's good for you, what do you like to put in front of people to win them over to your view?
So,
in terms of food,
I think the most important thing is getting them to get their hands on the food. And so in my cooking classes, people get their hands on the food. They are chopping and cutting. And I try to make it easy, like the dishes that you were just discussing about, the different cultural dishes. So I find that Mexican cuisine and Asian cuisine and Indian cuisine, all these things have amazing spices. And so getting people accustomed to spices and flavor profiles of the actual food themselves is essential. So I find that soups, stews are great ways to maximize nutritional benefits. And getting people easy ways to batch cook things, that's essential too. Making this easy for people and also showing them how it can be less expensive to eat this way. Those are all critical aspects of this equation. And most people think, oh, it's too expensive to eat like that. Well, no, it's expensive to not eat like this because how are you paying for your medical bills and how are you paying for your medications that you're going to need to be on when you're eating bad food?
Yeah, we got it. Keep on, Jessica. It's great to have you there from Buffalo. Healing herself and healing her husband and maybe eating well, too. Polly in Asheville, North Carolina. Polly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, 40 years ago, I dropped medical insurance and said I'd never let one of those money-making businessmen called a doctor touch me again.
Well, you're braver than me, but how'd you pull it off?
I began to study everything I could get my hands on about natural health of mind and body. Today, I'm 99% vegan. I've been alive for a little over 60-some years. I'm slim, I'm healthy, I'm full of energy. And it was one step at a time. And the thing is, you've got to have some kind of big motivation. I had a big one. And every day now in my life, I continue to study. I love it. It's exciting. I love a vegan food. Today, I had for breakfast, I started with blueberries and then applesauce. And I steamed cauliflower with carrots and onion and garlic and purple potatoes. And my grain was what is considered one of the most nutritional foods in the world, amaranth. And I had that with a little olive oil and garlic. And my tea was dandelion tea. And I
You've got it all going, Polly.
Huh?
You've got it all going there.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah. And then for a snack, I may do walnuts with prune, a little bit of coconut oil. And it just, and I'm 50% raw. And in New Orleans, before I left during Hurricane Katrina, I grew most of my food in my backyard. Organic, heirloom, open pollinated seeds. I grew everything by hand. It was so good for my peace of mind and my mental and physical health. And today, I have not taken as much as an aspirin in over 40 years. I walk a few miles a day. I consider exercise off in clean air places to be most important. And,
Polly, we got it. You're a living Buddha. I mean, Mark Bittman, do the Pollys come out when you go around with your book and sort of mob you, slim and you know, not an aspirin in 40 years because they're going with the veggies?
I would say that that Polly is an unusual case in my experience, but it's great story.
It's really great. Keep with it, Polly. I absolutely love it. Whitney in Baltimore, you're on with Mark Bittman.
Hey, Tom. Hey,
hi.
Mark. So, I am actually a campus outreach coordinator at my local community college and an intern with the education group, the Humane League. So my function in this program is essentially to promote Meatless Mondays in the lives of college students and people who might otherwise never consider eating vegetarian or vegan.
Well, humane. So you're doing it because you're against the killing of animals or because you're pro the vegetarian way?
Specifically, I decided to make the switch to a plant-based diet after learning that a third of the Earth's fresh water actually goes to produce animal agriculture products, and that out of the 800 million people that are currently I guess in a starving situation or without access to food regularly, we're actually producing enough food specifically for livestock and animal agriculture in the West to feed 795 million people worldwide.
So what's your question for Mark, Whitney? What's your question here for Mark Bittman?
So my question specifically is for the people that are totally opposed to eating their vegetables and absolutely need that meat replacement. Would you recommend something like, I guess, which is your favorite out of like the jackfruit, mushrooms, the textured vegetable protein, like zucchini and all the things you can use to replace that texture that people
are you talking about replacing the texture or the protein?
Specifically the texture of meat that people miss when they first make the switch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the application because you can make a chili, for example, with wheat berries or bulgur or any number of other things, and it's pretty much indistinguishable from ground meat. And you know, ground meat is pretty easy to substitute for. But you know, in terms of the thing is that people already like vegetables. They just have most people already like vegetables. They just. It's almost as if they can't figure out how to use them. But some of the things you just mentioned, mushrooms, zucchini, I can't remember what else. But these are things people already really like and are used to. The question is finding ways to help them make their meals more vegetable forward. It's not – I don't think it's rocket science, and I think it is happening. It's just going to take a while.
Orange carrots make a perfect carrot cake. White asparagus is great.
It's hard to decide just which one we should make. Da 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 da.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with food maven, philosopher, and cook Mark Bittman about how to go green with our diets and cooking. He's out with a new cookbook, 10th anniversary of his cookbook. It is How to Cook Everything Vegetarian, and it is pretty gorgeous. Lots of people thinking about going this way, many people actually going this way. Not Charles Barkley. We heard him earlier in the hour saying vegetarianism, it's not a thing. Nobody doesn't like meat, says Barkley. Mark Bittman, not opposed to meat, but said, let's go much, much, much bigger on the plant-based side of things. You can join us this hour. What's your question, your discovery in the vegetable realm, vegetarian realm, for Mark Bittman? Before this hour's over, we're going to talk with Shalane Flanagan, the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon since 1977, the first in 40 years, and she will be joining us from Portland, Oregon, in just a few minutes. Lots of callers lined up for you, Mark. Pam in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Pam, thanks very much for calling. You're on.
Thank you. I just wanted to share, I guess you'd say, a story or discovery category. I have gotten into fresh milling of grain and have discovered that it's just very beneficial for health and very satisfying. I've learned a lot about it. So I just wanted to encourage people to consider looking into that.
Maybe fresh milling of grain. So you just get the whole grain and you mill it all yourself?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I've learned that grain is actually highly nutritious and has a lot of dense nutrition, especially certain ones. But it oxidizes very quickly, so it loses 90% of its nutrition in 3 days.
Get out. That means my pantry is full of cardboard. Mark Bittman, jump in here. Fresh milling of grain, is it that important?
I don't know about the 90% thing, but I do know that fresher grains and freshly milled grains taste amazing. I also know that the sort of anti-grain movement is ridiculous. It's a question of whether we're eating grains that are nutritious or grains that have been robbed of all their nutrients. So certainly the fresher, the better. But I do think that whole grains in every form are worth eating.
Do you fresh mill regularly, Mark? Is that not your thing?
You know, I promised myself that I was going to, but honestly, I don't. I eat a lot of whole grains.
Yeah.
And I buy much better flour grown by farmers who really care about the wheat that they're growing more often than I used to. But as I said, I don't know about the losing 90% of nutrients in 3 days. That's a hard sell. But the difference between whole grains and grains that have been robbed of everything except for the starch is tremendous, and it's the difference between grains that are nutritious and high in fiber and basically healthy.
How do you know which is which? People go to the store and if they want good, what you would call good grains, then, or what do you look for?
You start with whole grains and real whole grains. A lot of bread that's labeled whole wheat is in fact not whole wheat. It's it's all-purpose flour, white flour, and that really has been robbed of just about everything. And then anything that's hyper-processed, that's got, you know, highly processed corn or wheat in it, is basically junk food.
There you go. Arthur in Sarasota, Florida. Arthur, you're on with Mark Bittman.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am a chef and restaurateur. And just over a year ago, I opened a plant-based restaurant. The menu is largely vegetables. However, we offer meat and protein sides in small portions.
Okay.
And it's
so
overwhelming.
Cool. And it as meat and protein sides, Mark Bittman thinks that's pretty cool. I guess I get it. Well, how's it going, Arthur?
It's going good. It's just that, you know, the women, you know, flock there and the husbands, you know, like, I need meat. And I run into them in, you know, public places and I'm like,
well, we have duck confit, we have some beef, and we have fish and shrimp, chicken. However, there are a large variety of different bowls of vegetables and sides of vegetables, and it's amazing that it's been received very well, and it's multi-generational. Millennials and elderly retirees are there. I see this. It's just, it's been amazing. And I'm not a vegetarian. However, I do eat a lot of vegetables and grains, and I eat meat very rarely when I crave it.
Yeah. Mark, I hear you applauding the idea of the meat as the side dish here.
I mean, I think it's Arthur, right? I think is brave, brilliant, a hero. I mean, that's a kind of place that we should see more of and that should be supportive. A vegetable first, but and food for everybody, I think that's really where it's at.
We've got Tyler writing to us online here saying 300 years from now, eating meat will be considered barbarism. With all the protein sources we have, all the health issues we have, the environmental issues caused by the meat industry, Tyler writes, there's no question history will not look kindly on our bacon-wrapped delicacies.
He's right, but if it takes 300 years, we're not going to be here. So it's going to have to be more like 30 years for us to survive.
And what's it meant? You said you've got less cheese and eggs in the 10th anniversary edition of How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. What's that meant in terms of overall profile of what you're offering?
I think the important thing to remember is that when you're trying to take animal products out of your diet, the thing to substitute for them is not a different form of animal products, but plants. From an environmental perspective and from an ethical perspective, animals that are raised for dairy are treated just as badly as animals that are raised for meat, except they're obviously not killed on a given day. And they do as much damage to the environment as animals who are raised for meat. So it's dairy is kind of a red herring here. The point is to eat fewer animal products and to eat more plants. And cheese, eggs, milk, I'm not saying these are bad things. These are fine parts of a diet if you want them to be, but they're not meat substitutes. They're just different.
Well, I tell you, dive into this cookbook and you can go in lots of directions in terms of national cuisines, cultural cuisines, within a Western tradition as well, but with plants right out front. Very beautiful, and I can't wait to get in there. Mark Bittman, it's been great to have you. The 10th anniversary edition is How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. Mark, keep it up. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks again, Tom. Talk to you soon. Take care.
In a moment, we speak to the woman who broke the long American losing streak at the New York City Marathon, Shalane Flanagan. This is On Point. Last Sunday, American runner Shalane Flanagan broke the tape in Central Park, becoming the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon since 1977. That is 40 years. She did it in 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 53 seconds, beating 3-time defending champion and world record holder Mary Kitani of Kenya. Well, Shalane Flanagan joins me now from Portland, Oregon. Shalane, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations. It's so great to have you with us. Let's listen for just a minute here. This is ESPN SportsCenter with your Breaking the Tape.
Look at the emotion of Shalane Flanagan as she comes to the line, breaks the tape. The joy evident as she has won her first world major marathon major.
Shalane Flanagan, I would have no idea. What is on a marathoner's mind? What's on your mind as you broke that tape, as you won it all?
Well, it was a moment that I've worked a lifetime to achieve. It was not, you know, just the last couple months of preparation. It literally has been since I was a little girl. I'm from Boston, and I would watch the Boston Marathon, and I dreamed of becoming a marathoner and eventually winning my own marathon. And, you know, it happened to be in the streets of New York after what was a really tough week for New Yorkers, and I was just thinking I have to bring some joy and smiles to the face of New Yorkers and to our nation. And it was a privilege and an honor to win that day.
We had, of course, the terrible situation with the pickup truck driven into all those people and the death count there. But this was a very different day. The runners came out. The New Yorkers came out to watch them run. It's pretty amazing. Take us through this run and how it began for you, what it felt like in the middle. When did you know? When did you, could you feel sort of in your muscles that, hey, this is going really well?
Yeah, well, I was facing three-time defending champion from Kenya, Mary Kitani, and world record holder, amongst a handful of other great other athletes. But she, by far, is the best over the last decade. And so I knew I had a huge task at hand to try to beat the world's best. So my race plan was to basically mirror myself and react to whatever Mary Kitani decided to do. And she's run the New York City Marathon a variety of ways. And I decided that no matter what she did, I was just going to try to attempt to stay as close to her as possible. The first half of the race was actually quite slow compared to what we're capable of running and what I train for.
Okay.
We went through the half marathon in about 76 minutes, which is kind of pedestrian for us.
Mm-hmm.
But over the second half, the pace picked up, and I just mirrored myself behind Mary and drafted off of her. But it was not until about the last 4 miles we broke apart, and there was just three of us, an Ethiopian woman, Mary, and myself. And as I got closer to the finish, it's like, you know, a racehorse. When you sniff the finish, you just get more excited. And I was just gaining more confidence the closer we got to the finish because it was a slower pace. And I know from having been a track runner and an Olympic medal from the track in Beijing, I rely on a good closing speed. And I arrived at, you know, 23 miles feeling really good and mm-hmm. was just reacting to the other runners. And I was able to close my last 3 miles very fast and able to secure the win. But I had no idea in those final miles how close Mary was or my competitors. So I just ran scared all the way to the finish. And until I could see the finish line, I really didn't allow myself to let up and celebrate because I was afraid to let this dream slip through my fingers if I was, you know, too confident.
Wow, you tell the story amazingly. You should call this the next when you're not running, you should be up in the booth calling these marathons. What's
well,
it like
I
to draft? Good for you. What's it like to draft or to mirror a champion like Mary? And of course, you came out on top here. How close do you run to her when you say you're drafting? You're actually trying to take advantage of that kind of being right behind her and sort of carried along with it. How closely do you observe her as you're following her for those miles?
Yeah. Well, if you know, you study, you know, in cycling, same thing, there's a drafting component, and I'm sure even in race car driving, and so there's a drafting component as well to running, and so I made sure to stick in the pack. New York is known notoriously for being windy on the bridges and exposure,
yeah.
So I was trying to conserve as much energy. I know that Mary has a much faster personal best over the marathon, 2:17, where I am a measly 2:21 record to my name. So I knew that in order to beat the best in the world, I had to conserve as much energy. And so I drafted as much as possible throughout the race to just give myself that extra little bit. Maybe it's only a percentage, but that percentage can make the difference between winning. So I was very calculated and methodical with my approach. And what my coach had told me was to just conserve as much. And so, you know, I stuck in the pack. We had a big group of women because of the slow pace. So I was able to kind of nuzzle in there and conserve energy. And then, you know, I was trying to assess how tired Mary was, and I kept checking out her form or her breathing.
Yeah.
It's a way to kind of just see how she's doing. And I could tell that she just wasn't maybe the typical Mary. She definitely was not... she didn't look as smooth as I've seen her. So I gained confidence seeing that she wasn't maybe having like potentially her best day. Or so it kind of, that again, gave me another boost of confidence.
The energy is so important. We've been talking with Mark Bittman this hour about vegetables, but you're actually out. You're a co-author of a cookbook there with Elise Kopecky called Run Fast, Eat Slow, Nourishing Recipes for Athletes. How do you eat to keep up that marathon scale energy, Shalane?
Yeah, so when I started to tackle the marathon, moving up from the track races, which were much shorter, most 6 miles on the track, I realized that I was just hungry all the time, and I couldn't keep up with the fueling. And so, you know, I had set a goal to make my fourth Olympics, and at that time, my best friend and college teammate, Elise Kopecky, had just finished up her schooling in New York City at culinary school. And she and I were over a home-cooked meal discussing our goals. And she kind of enlightened me to a new way of eating, which incorporated some more healthy fats into my diet. And she said that she felt like it was kind of life-changing to her and was just demonstrating a few ways in which I could enhance my training and not be so hungry all the time. And I told her that I thought it was revolutionary because I think a lot of athletes tend to fear fat, especially in the American culture, and love a lot of packaged foods that are quick and convenient, when in reality we should be getting in the kitchen and cooking our own foods and indulging in these nourishing fats that'll help us stay satiated. So as an experiment, I adapted her new way of kind of eating and realized I felt so much better, and I wasn't reaching for cereal or a bag of chips late at night after I'd already had my dinner. And so from that point on, we decided we need to share this knowledge and information, and that's how, you know, Run Fast, our book came to be. So it was a really rewarding process.
Run Fast, Eat Slow is the cookbook there with Elise Kopecky. So here you are, first American woman to win this in 40 years. That must be an incredible feeling. I mean, are you going to do it again? There's been rumors you might retire.
Yes, it's so hard to top these incredible moments. I mean, this is a lifetime of work, and so it's almost like, you know, trying to go and recreate this moment again.
Yeah,
it likely wouldn't happen, and I can appreciate that, and I'm okay with it. You know, when I won an Olympic medal in Beijing, I realized I can't top this moment. This is what it is. So I think I have to assess. I'm going to live in the present moment, soak up this moment as much as I can, and then I will assess, you know, what's my next motivation, what's my next goal, and it has to be something pretty special in order to keep going, because I do have other passions in my life, writing cookbooks.
Right, yeah.
We have another cookbook coming out next August, and you know, eventually I want to start my own family, and so there
great.
Are a lot of ways I feel like I can contribute.
Shalane Flanagan, you're a hero to us. Congratulations on your victory. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.